Hello, listeners. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Services for the Blind and Print Disabled. Welcome to today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for November 29th. I'm Arlene Nepple from Drake University. Here's our first story. This one is titled Potawatomi, Potawatomi County Rural Recycling Center marks 5 years in operation. 5 years ago, the Potawatomi County Rural Recycling Center opened its doors of its new home off the Highway 59 just north of Oakland. The goals for the new facility were to foster participation in recycling throughout the county and minimize waste to conserve energy, recover resources, and protect the environment. Over the last 5 years, rural Potawatomi County residents have shown that they are up to the task. And here's a picture of the building and a sign saying now open. In 2002, the recycling center recycled 44,320 pounds of paper, 35,740 pounds of plastic, and 87,740 pounds of cardboard, according to the county. In total, the center processed more than 2.4 million pounds of recyclable products in 2022, up from the 1.8 million in 2021 and the 1.6 million in 2020. Matt Wyant, director of the Potawatomi County Planning and Development, attributes the center's success to partnerships with the city and local organizations throughout the county. What we've tried to do since day one in this facility is emphasize the importance of collaboration, Wyant said in a news release. We're grateful for the assistance we've received from local organizations to help accomplish our goals, and we're excited about the participation from our residents that have helped ensure our county is thriving for future generations. Together, we've really made a difference. Prior to the operations moving to the current location, rural recycling was managed out of a small and aging building near Hancock. The move to the new facility has allowed easier access for its residents and expanded recycling services. We accept a number of items at no cost to our residents, said Tom Grobe, manager of the recycling center. Paper, cardboard, plastic, glass, metal, and household hazards waste like batteries and oil are all accepted free of charge. We'll take a few other items for a small fee, and we operate Tuesday through Saturday to meet the needs of our community the best we can. In addition to building the recycling facility, the county has also made available portable recycling trailers at several parks and towns of Carson, Crescent, Hancock, Macadamia, McClelland, McClelland, Oakland, and Walnut, with more to come. We have goals to continue to expand our reach, Wyatt said. We'd like to add some additional trailers throughout the county in the future, and it's exciting to think about how we've grown and where we're headed. The county is also trying to help the residents get rid of unwanted items that might still be good enough in condition to find another home. The swap shop is laid out like a thrift store, where many people can browse through everything from furniture to electronics to bikes. The swap shop is laid out like a thrift store, where people can browse through everything from furniture to electronics to bikes. Residents can drop off their own unwanted but still useful goods, or take them. People can browse through everything from furniture, electronics to bikes. Residents can drop off their own unwanted but still useful goods or take home whatever they like, at no cost. It's been a very successful venture for us, Grobe said. Many residents have benefited from that program, and it's a great way for us to promote responsible disposal of unwanted items. The Potawatomi County Rural Recycling Center is located at 41911 Industrial Drive, north of Oakland. The center is open Tuesday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. That was our first story. Our second story is named Less Driving, More Deaths. Iowa Senator plans to reintroduce camera limits. And there is a picture with a state trooper and a junior high school student, Tyler Reefs, at Trenor High School. That is spelled T-R-E-Y-N-O-R. And he is pretending to be arrested for causing a fatal wreck due to distracted driving. And there are local law enforcement officers, firefighters, and student actors staging a mock car crash outside the school on Friday, April 8, 2022. Traffic deaths are lingering near historic heights in most states despite less driving overall, prompting policymakers to consider deploying more police or installing automated monitoring such as speed cameras to curb speeding and reckless driving. People are driving fewer miles than they were in 2019, but are dying on roadways. But more are dying on roadways. Traffic deaths spiked 18% from 2019 to 2022. Their miles fell 30% according to Stateline Analytics of Federal Records of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration in the U.S. Bureau of Transportation Statistics. Experts blame bad driving habits that took hold when roadways suddenly cleared out as the COVID-19 pandemic started in 2022. At the same time, law enforcement agencies shifted their priorities away from traffic violations, and many struggled to hire officers amid heightened scrutiny and criticism, especially after a police officer killed George Floyd in May 2020 in Minneapolis. States and cities are trying to reduce the number of deaths caused by risky driving with a mix of more police officers and controversial technologies such as speed and red light cameras. But many critics see those approaches as potentially troublesome since traffic tickets are a heavier financial burden on low-income drivers, and others say cameras violate people's privacy and right to due process. Law enforcement has really stepped back from enforcing traffic laws, said Jonathan Atkins, CEO of the Governor's Highway Safety Association. We have to get police back out there and get support for police back, but this has to be done the right way, and it hasn't been done fairly. And we don't want to look at technology, cameras don't see race. And we do want to look at technology, cameras don't see race, they don't see gender. The nation's two most populous states, California and Texas, have taken different paths. In October, California approved a speed camera pilot program to begin next year. Texas hasn't reconsidered its 2019 ban on local speed and red light cameras, but state transportation officials have asked local police to step up ticketing. Police in Fort Worth ramped up enforcement in response to residents' complaints about reckless drivers. According to Passports, writing 12,000 tickets for speeding and careless driving between November 2022 and April 2023. Traffic deaths were up by 18% in California and 24% in Texas between 2019 and 2022. The latest full year available from National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. In Washington State, traffic fatalities were up 38% last year compared with 2019, reaching a 30-year high or low. In response, the state is considering expanding its limited speed camera use. State officials plan to visit Finland next month to see how that country used automated enforcement to reduce traffic deaths. When people see a sign, speed camera ahead, they slow down. Gov. Jay Isley, a Democrat, told the Washington State Standard. They're very correct. Nationally, most of the change in fatal accidents has been caused by speeding, careless driving, or drug or alcohol use. According to Federal Fatality Analysis Reporting System data from 2019 to 2021, the latest year available from that source, driver deaths increased most in that time, 21%. Deaths by pedestrians and motorists rose by 18%, and bicyclists' deaths by 12%. Most of the increase from 2019 to 2022 has been in cities, suburbs, and small towns, with rural areas less affected. According to separate federal statistics and deaths caused by traffic accidents kept by the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Vermont, which has been struggling to fill police jobs, saw the largest percentage increase of any state from 2019 to 2022, a 64% jump from 47 to 77 deaths. Other states with large percentage increases included Connecticut, 54%, New Hampshire, 47%, and the District of Columbia, 39%, and Washington State, 38%. Traffic deaths are the most common cause for death for people under 40 in Arkansas, Nebraska, and Texas, according to a September Dateline analysis. The only states to see a decrease in traffic deaths from 2019 to 2022 were Wyoming, down 9%, Rhode Island, down 5%, North Dakota, down 3%, and Ohio, down 2%. Those four states did see an increase in the first 6 months of 2023, however, compared with 2022. About half of Wyoming's fatal crashes in 2022 involved speeding or failure to wear seatbelts, according to a state report. Legislative efforts. In California, speed camera legislation has been stymied in the past by disagreements over fines and impacts on residents with low incomes. The compromise bill, as enacted in October, will allow community service in lieu of fines or for low-income drivers who are ticketed in the pilot program, and limit placement of cameras to streets with speeding issues in a handful of cities. Atkins, the CEO of the Governor's Safety Group, and said other states should be similarly cautious. You have to be really careful with those camera programs. We don't want cameras to be a gotcha, Atkins said. This should only be in areas that have a problem. Another state considering more speed cameras is Pennsylvania, where a pilot program put speed cameras on one street in Philadelphia and in work zones statewide. A bill to make the program permanent and expand it within the Philadelphia passed the State House and is now pending in the State Senate Committee. Pennsylvania's traffic fatalities increased 12% from 2019 to 2022, according to the Stateline Analytics. In Philadelphia, speed cameras cut fatal accidents in half, saving an estimated 36 lives, and reduced speeding by 95% after they were introduced in 2020, on the 14-mile stretch of Roosevelt Boulevard, a main artery, according to the city records obtained by Stateline. Cameras detected 8,305 speeders in February 2023, compared with the 224,000 when they were first installed in June 2022. States that have banned cameras for speeding and or red light violations often cite driver complaints about high fines and say it's unfair for drivers to have to face accusations from machines instead of police officers. The National Motorists Association, a driver advocacy group, opposes red light and speed cameras, saying they infringe upon due process rights. Some Texas lawmakers called camera violations constitutional principles of presumption of innocence and the right to confront one's accuser as they have passed a bipartisan 2019 measure that banned photographic enforcement. Other states with laws banning traffic cameras include Maine, Mississippi, New Hampshire, New Jersey, South Carolina, West Virginia, and Wisconsin, according to the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, a trade group. The Missouri Supreme Court struck down St. Louis red light cameras in 2015, saying they were unconstitutional because cameras couldn't document who was driving the car. However, in face of increased fatalities, the city announced in September that it is considering a new plan for speed and red light cameras that record drivers' faces as well as license plates. Now on to the Iowa section. Iowa lawmaker has doubts. In Iowa, where 19 cities and towns use cameras for speed or red light enforcement, Republican Stater Senator Mike Klimesash, I am so sorry, that is spelled K-L-I-M-E-S-H, said he plans to reintroduce a bill next year limiting fines and requiring revenue sharing with the state to benefit a retirement fund for volunteer workers like firefighters. Cities should have to prove that the cameras are placed in areas where they improve safety, he said. This would require the cities to provide some data to prove it makes sense to put the camera in that specific location. It's not just a gotcha or a revenue generator, he said. We're trying to make sure that they're looking first and foremost at the law enforcement presence, officers in vehicles, he added. He sponsored a similar bill this year that did not progress to a floor vote. Some Iowa Republican lawmakers have been trying in vain over the past 10 years to eliminate traffic cameras, despite opposition from city leaders and law enforcement groups who argue the devices are a safety measure. Iowa's increase in traffic deaths between 2019 and 2022 was only 1%, according to Stateline analysis of National Highway Traffic Safety Administration data and estimates. Risky behavior. As with Washington, officials' planned visit to Finland, states are increasingly finding inspiration in Europe's mostly automated traffic control strategies that are cutting facilities, and Annie Hammer, H-A-M-R-E, Director of the Policy and Research at the Eno Center for Transportation, a nonprofit traffic policy think tank, that interest could help revive Vision Zero initiatives meant to eradicate traffic deaths entirely that have recently seen numbers headed in the wrong way. We're leaving a lot on the table as far as safety goes. Compared to some places in Spain, France, Scandinavia, Vision Zero works. What doesn't work is Vision Zero light, which is what we're seeing, Hammer said. States such as Texas that have banned red light and speed cameras have just taken that tool away from localities altogether, Hammer said. Along with speeding and careless driving, there has been a puzzling increase in the number of people killed in crashes who are not wearing seat belts. The number of drivers and passengers killed in crashes who are unbelted rose from 24% between 19 and 21. Sorry, the year 2019 and 2021. According to the data from the Fatality Analysis Reporting System, the increases were highest for 25 to 34-year-olds, up 51%. It seems like there was something going on with people that was leading to this riskier behavior, and we don't really know what was causing it. Jessica C-I-C-C-H-I-N-O, not going to try and pronounce that, Vice President of Research for the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Even when people weren't driving that much, the people who were driving were doing it in a more risky way, they said. Atkins said the decline in seatbelt use is kind of nuts, which I agree. But other factors are more understandable, considering the early pandemic days let some people feel free to drive poorly. People started driving crazy because they could, Edkin said. They were so used to these roads being full, and then our driving behavior didn't go back to normal. We had to learn to share the roads in absent when we have to better engineering and more enforcement out there, unfortunately. That is the end of the second and very long story. Now for a short political article named Both Parties Move to Force Vote on Santos. Washington. House lawmakers from both parties moved Tuesday to force a vote this week on the expulsion of Representative George Santos, a New York Republican who was the subject of a scathing ethics investigation report released this month that found he stole from his campaign and deceived donors. Santos responded to the competing expulsion resolutions by talking to the House floor and asking colleagues to understand what kind of precedent it would set for him to be removed before nearly 24 federal charges against him are resolved. He made it clear that he would not resign beforehand. This expulsion vote simply undermines and underscores the precedent that we've had in this chamber, Santos said. It started and puts us in a new direction, a dangerous one. That was it. Now for the section titled Briefly. The Ukraine War. The wife of Ukraine's intelligence chief was diagnosed with heavy metals poisoning and is being treated in a hospital, a spokesperson for the agency said Tuesday, as the country's war with Russia stretched on to its 22nd month. Trump. When the Deutsche D-E-U-T-S-C-H-E bank loaned Donald Trump's company hundreds of millions of dollars, the bank followed its own guidelines that included checking out information that would be borrowers provided. An executive testifies Tuesday at the former president's civil fraud trial. President-elect. Argentina's right-wing president-elect Javier Milei met Tuesday with senior Biden administration officials at the White House in his first international trip since winning a runoff earlier this month. Haley. Americans for Prosperity, the political arm of the powerful Koch network, formally endorsed Nikki Haley's presidential campaign Tuesday, promising to help her defeat former President Donald Trump in the GOP primary contest. Airline. Federal mediators rejected a union's request that could have cleared the way for a strike by flight attendants at American Airlines. The National Mediation Board directed the airline and the Association for Professional Flight Attendants to keep negotiating a new contract. Now the last one, World Expo. Members of the Paris-based Bureau International, the Expositions chose Saudi Arabia's capital, Riyadh, on Tuesday to host the 2030 World Expo following its bid that focused on shaping a prosperous and sustainable future. Crazy we're thinking that far ahead. Now for a cute story. Adopt an Axolotl campaign launches. Effort to save iconic water monster from pollution, trout. Mexico City. Ecologists from Mexico's National Autonomous University have relaunched a fundraising campaign to bolster conservation efforts for axolotls, an iconic endangered fish-like type of salamander. The campaign called Adopt-a-Taxolotl, that is spelled A-D-O-P-T-A-X-O-L-O-T-L, Adopt Axolotl, possibly, asks people for as little as 600 pesos, about $35, to virtually adopt one of the tiny water monsters. Virtual adoption comes with live updates on your axolotl's health. For less, donors can buy one of the creatures a virtual dinner. You can do that for me for free. I'm kidding. In their main habitat, the population density of Mexican axolotls, ajolotls, have plummeted 99.5% in under 2 decades, according to scientists behind the fundraiser. Last year, Adopt Axolotl campaign reached just over, 450,000 pesos, about $26,300, towards an experimental captive breeding program and efforts to restore habitat in the ancient Aztec canals of Xochimilco, a southern borough of Mexico City. Still, there are not enough resources for the research, said Alejandro Calleza, a zoologist surveying less well-known species of axolotls for the government's environment department. We lack big monitoring of all the streams in Mexico City, let alone the whole country, he said, who leads a team of 9 researchers. For this large area, it's not enough. Despite the creature's recent rise to popularity, which could be because of squishmallows, almost all 18 species of axolotl in Mexico remain critically endangered, threatened by encroaching water pollution, a deadly amphibian fungus, and non-native rainbow trout. While scientists could once find 6,000 axolotls on average per half a square mile in Mexico, there are only 36, according to the National Autonomous University's last census. A more recent international study found less than 1,000 Mexican axolotls left in the wild. Luis Zambrano Gonzalez, one of the university's scientists, announced the fundraiser, and he said, hopes to begin a new census, the first since 2019, in March. There is no more time for the city with an X in it, Xochimilco, said Zambrano. The invasion of pollution is very strong. Soccer fields, floating dens. It's very sad. I agree. Without data on the number and distribution of different axolotl species in Mexico, it is hard to know how long the creatures have left and where to prioritize what resources are available. What I know is that we're going to have to work urgently, said Calza. Axolotls have grown into a cultural icon in Mexico for their unique, admittedly slimy appearance and uncanny ability to regrow limbs. Wow, that's impressive. In labs around the world, scientists think that this healing power could hold the secret recipe to tissue repair and even cancer recovery. Cute little slimy things. In the past, government conservation programs have largely focused on more popular species. The Mexican axolotl, found in Xochimilco, but other species can be found across the country, from tiny streams in the Valley of Mexico to the northern Sandora Desert. Mexico City's expanding urbanization have damaged the water qualities in canals, while in lakes around the capital, rainbow trout, which escape from farms and can displace axolotls and eat their food. Calzada said his team is increasingly finding axolotls dead from CHRYTID fungus, a skin-eating disease causing catastrophic amphibian die-offs from Europe to Australia. While academics rely on donations, and Calzonia's team turns to a corps of volunteers, the Mexican government recently approved an 11% funding cut for its environmental department over its 6 years of the administration of President Andrés Manuel López Obrador. Will have given 35% less money to the country's environmental department than its predecessor, according to the analysts of Mexico's 2024 budget. Well, let's hope that those little slimy lifesavers stay around or climb up the Mississippi River to me. Now for our midpoint statement. You're listening to County Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for November 29th. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Services for the Blind and Print Handicapped in Des Moines. I'm Arlene Neppel from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from the listeners. If you have comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call the toll-free number from anywhere in Iowa at 515-243-6833. Back to the news. Now, this one is titled, More Prisoners Go Home. Mediators gather in Qatar to try and extend temporary ceasefire. Middle East, Israeli-Hamas war. Deir al-Bahala, that is spelled D-E-I-R-A-L-B-A-L-A-H, Gaza Strip. A fragile truce between Israel and Hamas held for the fifth day Tuesday, as international mediators in Qatar worked to extend it and more hostages were freed from Gaza. Israel came under pressure from the United States to better protect Palestinian civilians from Gaza if it follows through on its promise to resume the war. Israel released 30 Palestinian prisoners on the fifth day of its temporary ceasefire with Hamas. Earlier Tuesday, Hamas released 12 hostages, the militant group held captive since October 7th. Mediators met in Qatar to try to extend the ceasefire beyond Wednesday. For the first time since it began, Israel and Hamas traded accusations of a serious violation with an exchange of fire between troops and militants in northern Gaza. But there was no indication that it would endanger the truce or the planned exchanges of hostages held in Gaza for Palestinians imprisoned in Israel. Israel has vowed to resume the war with full force to destroy Hamas once it's clear that no more hostages will be freed under the deal. The Biden administration told Israel it must avoid significant further displacement and mass casualties among Palestinian civilians if it resumes the offensive. It must operate with more precision in southern Gaza than it has in the north, according to U.S. officials. Officials spoke on condition of anonymity under ground rules set by the White House. The CIA director, William Burns, and David Bernarda, who heads Israel's Mossad intelligence agency, were in Qatar, a key mediator with Hamas to discuss extending the ceasefire and releasing more hostages, a diplomat said, on condition of anonymity. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is set to visit the region this week, also with an eye on extending the truce. Hamas and other militants are still holding about 160 hostages out of the 240 seized in their October 7th assault in southern Israel that ignited the war. Israel says it is willing to extend the ceasefire by one day for every 10 additional hostages that Hamas releases, according to the deal brokered by the Qatar, Egypt, and the U.S. Hamas is expected to make higher demands for the release of captive soldiers. Israel has vowed to end Hamas's 16 rule in Gaza and crush its military capabilities. That would almost certainly require expanding the ground offensive from northern Gaza to the south, where most of Gaza's population of 2.3 million are crowded. Let us hope for as many lives as possible to be spared in this war. Now on to official indicates Fed could start cutting rates. Washington, a key Federal Reserve official, raised the possibility Tuesday that the Fed could decide to cut its benchmark interest rates as early as spring if inflation keeps declining steadily. Christopher Waller, a member of the Fed's Board of Governors, cautioned that inflation is still too high and it's not yet certain if a recent slowdown in price increases can be sustained. Still, in remarks that the American Enterprise Institute, a Washington, D.C. think-based tank, he sounded the most optimistic notes of any Fed official since the central bank launched its aggressive high rates in March 2022 and signaled the central bank is likely done raising rates, we hope. Waller is regarded as a relatively hawkish official, meaning he typically favors higher rates to combat inflation rather than low rates to boost job growth. He is somewhat of a bellwether, fun word, for the Fed's overall rate set community. And that was that story. Now for our last political news, Hunter Biden offers to publicly testify to panel. Washington, Hunter Biden offered Tuesday to testify publicly before Congress, striking a defiant note in response to a subpoena from Republicans and setting up a potential high-stakes face-off, even as a separate special counsel probe unfolds and his father, President Joe Biden, campaigns for re-election. The Democratic president's son slammed the subpoena's request for the closed-door testimony, saying it can be manipulated. Representative James Comer of Kentucky, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, stood firm, saying Republicans expect full cooperation with their original demand for a deposition. Hunter Biden's lawyer called the inquiry a fishing expedition. In response in line with the more forceful legal action approach he's taken in recent months as the congressional Republicans pursue an impeachment inquiry seeking to tie his father to his business dealings. Republicans so far failed to uncover evidence directly implicating President Biden in wrongdoing. Comer said, Tuesday the president's son could testify publicly in the future, but he expects him to sit for a deposition on December 13th as outlined in the subpoena. That's it for the political news. Here is a really feel-good story named Family Friends Gather to Honor Rosalyn Carter. Jimmy Carter, 99, now in hospice, makes a rare public appearance. Atlanta. Rosalyn Center was memorialized Tuesday as a matriarch who felt most comfortable among the impoverished and vulnerable as she was mourned by a rare gathering of all living U.S. First Ladies and multiple presidents, including her 99-year-old husband, Jimmy Carter, in the front row. The tribute marked the second day of a three-day scheduled of public events celebrating the former First Lady and global humanitarian who died November 19th at home in Plains, Virginia, at age 96. Tributes began Monday in the Carters' native Sumter County. My mother was the glue that held our family together through the ups and downs and thicks and thins of our family politics. Her son, James Earl Chip Carter III, said. The former president, who was 10 months into home hospice care and hadn't been seen in public since September, watched from his wheelchair, reclining and covered in a blanket featuring his wife's face, with Chip and his daughter Amy holding his hands. Their other sons, Jeff and Jack, flanked them. He never wants to be far from her, Carter Center CEO Paige Alexander said. Not really a feel-good story, but a wholesome ending. Now here's an article for the football fans called College Football Playoff. And its main title is Loaded Field Fuel Weekend Drama. The four-team college football playoff is going out with the most crowded field of contenders and the most consequential championship weekend in the 10-year history of the system. Eight teams have at least a glimmer of hope to make the field. Yes, that means you too, Ohio State. The Penulimited, CFP, I'm not a sports person, I'm so sorry, rankings were released Tuesday. Georgia remained number one. Michigan moved up a spot second after beating Ohio State. Unbeaten Washington was third, followed by an unbeaten Florida State. Oregon remained fifth. Ohio State slipped to number six, Texas was seventh, and Alabama was eighth. The field for the playoff will be announced Sunday. Determining what teams are CFP contenders heading into the championship is a bit subjective. More often than not, a Power 5 team with only one loss is going into the conference title games, regardless of whether the team is playing, has to be considered alive. No team with two losses have ever made it to the CFP, but at least a couple times a team with two losses has had to be considered in contention when it played for conference title. Auburn in 2017 is the most obvious example. Yes, very obvious. That season was one of the few where championship weekend had multiple games matching CFP contenders. More important, championship weekend hasn't been about teams playing their way onto the field as much as watching for whether teams might play their way out. Last season, when Southern California lost to Pac-12 championship game on Friday night, the field was practically set before Saturday's games kicked off. Georgia and Michigan won their conferences to stay perfect and lock down the top two big seeds. But top two seeds, but would have gotten in regardless. TCU lost the Big 12 game title and got in. Ohio State slipped in the back door without playing. Alabama coach Nick Saban politicked for the Tide to get in with two losses, but there was no real drama heading into Selection Sunday. This year, every conference championship has at least one CFP contender. The Pac-12 and the SEC each have two. Two-time defending champion Georgia might be able to lose to Alabama and make the field, as it did on the way to the national title in 21. But that is far from a guarantee. There are multiple scenarios that could play out this weekend and leaving the 13-member CFP selection committee facing almost impossible choices Saturday night. With such strong teams on top of college football playing the season, it would seem to be perfect to have a 12-team playoff to accommodate all of them. That is coming next year. Although an argument could be made if there were more seasons like this that produced dramatic championship weekends and intrigue heading into Selection Sunday, maybe the CFP would not need to expand. Here are the paths for the four final contenders. Georgia, Michigan, and Washington. With perfect records, it's simple. Win and you're in. Being unbeaten proves some hope of backing in after a loss, especially for the Bulldogs, winners of 29 straight games. Florida State. The Semi-Olds are perfect in playoff position heading into their Atlantic Coast Conference title game against Louisville, but to injury a star quarterback, Jordan Travis creates some uncertainty. You want to be pushing and playing your best ball in November so you can go into December and have these opportunities, Florida State coach Mike Norvell said. Leaving an unbeaten Power 5 conference champion out of the playoff would be unprecedented and some would say unfair, but the committee is instructed to judge the team as it is entering the postseason. If Florida State muddles past Louisville and Alabama beats Georgia in a competitive game, leaving the two-time defending national champion 12-1, but without a conference title, the committee will face the question, are the Tate Roadmaker-led semi-olds better than the Bulldogs? It's more than just one player. It's a different team without Travis. The selection committee chairman Boo Corrigan said on ESPN, Oregon, Texas, and Alabama. Life is more complicated for these three 11-1 teams playing for their conference titles. The Ducks seem to have the clearest path. The committee has had them ahead of Texas for weeks. So it would stand to reason if they beat Washington and win the Pac-12, they're good to go. Texas fans don't want to hear that and have been frustrated with the Longhorns' placement behind Oregon. It's a fair complaint, but unlikely to change now with Texas playing Oklahoma State 9-3 in the Big 12 game and Oregon getting a chance to avenge its loss to Washington. Texas might also have a case in a comparison against the current version of Florida State. And if Alabama can pull the upset in the SEC, that could help the Horns, who beat the Tide in Tuscaloosa in September, right? Right. Well, SEC champion has never been left out of the playoff, and having one that stops Georgia's 29-game winning streak would be surprising. This is one of the most competitive venues in college football, CBN said of the SEC championship game. We're obviously playing one team of the best teams in college football, if not the best team in college football. Among these three, Texas seems to be likely to get the squeeze, and Alabama is this weekend's biggest wild card. A Tide victory makes everything more complicated. Ohio State, in a world where Florida State, Oregon, Texas, and Alabama lose, the Buckeyes look like winners. One more brief sports article. Blackhawks. Chicago is terminating the contract of Corey Perry after internal investigation showed the veteran acted in violation of his contract and the club's policies intended to promote a professional and safe working environment. Chicago moved a conditional fifth round pick in the 2024 draft to Vancouver for Anthony Beauviller, Beauviller, Wild. Minnesota General Manager Bill Guerin said he wants new coach John Hayes to try and restore the team's confidence, swagger, and identity. Guerin fired Dean Evason on Monday. Must have not had that swagger in check. Here is the stat of the day. 20 with 20 assists in November. Colorado Avalanche defenseman Cal Marker is only one assist away from matching the most assists in a single month in franchise history. Peter Stastny, Stastny, holds the mark with 21 assists in October of 1983. I think we are talking about basketball, but I'm not sure. Now, as we're wrapping things up, on to my favorite article, Today in History. Today's highlights. On November 29th, 1981, film star Natalie Wood drowned at age 43 while boating off California's Santa Catalina Island with her actor husband, Robert Wagner and Christopher Walken. On this date in 1864, a Colorado militia militia killed at least 150 peaceful Cheyenne Indians in the Sand Creek Massacre. In 1910, British explorer Robert F. Shipp's Terra Nova set sail from New Zealand, carrying Scott's expedition onto its ultimately futile, as well as fatal, race to reach the South Pole first. In 1924, Italian composer Giacomo Puccini died in Brussels before he could complete his opera Turandot, Turandot. In 1929, Navy Lieutenant Commander Richard E. Byrd, pilot Bernt Balkan, radio operator Harold June, and photographer Ashley McKinley made the first airplane flight over the South Pole. In 1947, the UN General Assembly passed a resolution calling for the partitioning of Palestine between Arabs and Jews. 33 members, including the United States, voted in favor of the resolution. 13 voted against, while 10 abstained. The plan, rejected by the Arabs, was never implemented. In 1961, Enos the Chimp was launched from the Cape Canaveral aboard the Mercury Atlas V spaceship, which orbited Earth twice before returning. In 1963, President Lyndon B. Johnson named a commission headed by Earl Warren to investigate the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. In 1986, actor Cary Grant died in Davenport, Iowa, at age 82. In 1987, a Korean Air 707 jetliner en route from Aden, Dubai to Bangkok was destroyed by a bomb planted by North Korean agents, killing all 115 people aboard. In 2001, former Beatle George Harrison died in Los Angeles after a battle with cancer. He was 58. In 2008, Indian commandos killed at least the last remaining gunman holed up in a luxury Mumbai hotel, ending a 60-hour rampage through India's financial capital by suspected Pakistani-based militants that killed 116 people. In 2012, the United Nations voted overwhelmingly to recognize a Palestine state, a vote that came exactly 65 years after the General Assembly adopted the plan to divide. Palestine into a separate state for Jews and Arabs. The 2012 vote was 138 in favor, 9 members, including the United States, voted against, and 41 abstained. In 2013, a police helicopter crashed into a pub in Glasgow, Scotland, killing 10 people. Lastly, in 2017, Today host Matt Lorner was fired for what NBC called inappropriate sexual behavior with a colleague. A published report accused him of crude and habitual misconduct with women around the office. Now, a quick birthday celebration for birthdays on November 29th. Blues musician John Mallet is 90. Actor Diane Ladd is 88. Musician Chuck Magonine, Magione, is 83. Singer keyboard is Felix Cavalier of the Rascals is 81. Actor Jeff Foley in Lost is 71. Director Joel Cohen is 69. Actor-comedian Howie Mandel is 68. Actor Kathy Moriarty is 63. Actor Kim Delaney in NYPD Blue is 62. Actor Andrew McCarthy is 61. Actor Don Chiladle, Cheadle, is 59. Actor Neil Barry, Friends and Lovers, is 58. Singer Jonathan Knight of The New Kids on the Block is 55. Actor Paula Turbe in True Blood is 53. Actor Larry Joe Campbell according to Jim, is 53. Contemporary Christian singer Crowder is 52. Actor Brian Baumgartner in The Office is 51. Actor Julian Overton from Downton Abbey is 48. Actor Anna Faris in Scary Movie is 47. Gospel singer James Fortune is 46. Actor Lauren German in Lucifer is 45. Rapper The Game is 44. Drummer Ringo Garza of Law's Lonely Boss is 42. Actor comedian John Milhazy from Saturday Night Live is 42. Actor Lucas Black in Sling Blade is 41. Actor Diego Bonta in Scream Queens is 33. Now on to our final message. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for November 29th. The Nonpareil can't be heard each weekday at 5 p.m. I'm Arlene Neppel from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind, and have a great day or night, wherever you are and whenever. Thank you.